Hello, everybody, and welcome to Friends of the Force, a Star Wars podcast. I'm your host, Brad.
And I'm your host, Sarah.
And happy book release day to Jedi Battle Scars, which is the sequel Woo! To Jedi Fallen Order and the precursor to Jedi Survivor, which is out in just over a month. On today's episode, we had the chance to talk with author Sam Maggs, who wrote this book. It is a wonderful, amazing, awesome, action-packed, full of heart book. Sam, she's a best-selling author of books, comics, and video games, and a lot of her work is really renowned, stuff that she's gotten to work on, like Critical Role, Transformers, etc. So it was a real honor to have her on the show and get to talk about Cal Kestis and the crew.
But it may be even more than Cal Kestis, Maren. This devolved into like just a Maren fan podcast. honestly, though, we had such a great conversation with Sam, and we love this book so much and just got to share in our excitement of the book with her. And yeah, we hope you enjoy the variety. We have such a variety of topics we talked about in this interview. So please listen on.
Yeah. And this is also Sam's first full-fledged adult novel. So really special occasion to get to chat with her on the release day. So
yes.
And just as a heads up, this episode does not contain spoilers, very light spoilers. We kind of just talk about the characters on an overview level, and we don't get into too many details. So you're safe if you haven't read the book yet. But with that in mind, let's jump into our conversation with author Sam Maggs. So we are so honored to be joined today by Star Wars author Sam Maggs, who just recently wrote the book, the newly released book, Star Wars Jedi Battle Scars, which is a personal favorite. Welcome to the show. We're so happy to have you.
Oh, thank you so much. I'm so happy to be here.
At the time this episode is dropping, Star Wars Jedi Battle Scars is on bookshelves. So how does it feel to have this book out in the world? You've done some Star Wars writing before, but this is like the first feature-length novel that you've done for Del Rey.
It is really exciting. I've been a fan of Del Rey's tie-in books with Star Wars for a really, really long time. I love so many of the authors in their stable, Claudia Gray, Delilah Dawson, Beth Revis, so many talented, wonderful people write for them. And so I feel very honored to be among their ranks now. And it's also my first adult novel ever. So that's also very nerve-wracking for me, but really exciting. I don't know. I hope people dig it.
Mission accomplished in my book, because the great book itself is gorgeous and the story is excellent. So it's a win from me, at least.
Huge.
We always love to start our interviews with just getting to know you and your history with Star Wars better. So, you know, what is your personal history as a Star Wars fan? When did you find this franchise, and what captured you about Star Wars?
Sure. So my parents were actually huge Star Wars fans. They saw A New Hope in theaters back in the 70s 22 times when it first came out. They were like OG fans. And so when I was very little, when I was like a baby, my dad used to put them on while we were hanging out at home all day while my mom was at work. So I was like born into fandom in a lot of ways. And instead of rebelling and getting into sports, I guess I just kind of went with it. And I was always a big fan. I remember my parents pulling me out of school the day Phantom Menace came out to go see it at the theater, like in the matinee opening afternoon. And just always been big Star Wars people in my house. And so getting to start to work for Star Wars has been a big personal and career milestone for me. I mean, the universe is so expansive and inspiring that it's incredibly fun to play in. and also my parents think it's really cool. So that was neat. Huge. but yeah, always been a huge fan.
Always helps to be born into a Star Wars family, because then you just have tastes like immediately. Like,
oh my God.
There's no denying it at that point.
You couldn't have put it better. So, so true, bestie.
So, speaking of having taste, you have a great taste in a career, because you're a writer, author. It's definitely one of those really rewarding careers, but also ones that can be tough and have their challenges. So like, what led you to pursue that career in writing, and how did that eventually cross paths with the Star Wars franchise when you first started doing the IDW comic, the Luke on the Bright Side story. What led to that opportunity as well?
I've always been a huge reader. I'm an only child. And so I entertained myself a lot as a kid, disappearing into fantasy and sci-fi stories, whether they be through books or, you know, I was a big TV gal, was always sort of, I was like a big fangirl of Stargate and lots of these other sci-fi properties that you could kind of disappear into. And I got into writing when I was really, really young. And it was just the thing that I always wanted to do and kind of the only thing that I was ever any good at, to be honest. So I did a bachelor's and a master's degree. And from there, moved on into writing professionally. And to your point, you know, it can be kind of a difficult career. I have been very fortunate to have a lot of really wonderful mentors in all the different industries that I've worked in over the years. So it's been great. And as for the Star Wars connection, I had been writing for IDW for some time when the Star Wars Adventures opportunity came up. I had done a significant amount of writing for their Marvel Action line, which was the equivalent of the Star Wars Adventures line, but for Marvel. They're sort of like all ages line. Wrote 11 issues of Marvel Action Captain Marvel for them. And when that ended, they approached me that they were looking for some shorts for the Star Wars Adventures line. And so that was how I got to pitch a very cute Luke and Leia story. I think that also was connected to Jedi Fallen Order because it took place on Bogano, my favorite planet from JFO, which was cool. And so it was a really neat opportunity to kind of get to dive into the Star Wars universe for the first time in print, which is cool. I worked a little bit, I forget the exact timeline, but I was around that time also working on a Star Wars video game briefly. So those two things kind of happened simultaneously. And it was just through folks that I had already worked with in games and in comics who knew my voice and knew what they were looking for, approached me about contributing. So yeah.
You make a great point.
Yeah.
You make a great point. I think you're the Star Wars author who's written the most about Bogano at this point, right?
Oh my gosh. Yeah, I think so too.
Bogano expert. Nice. You know,
I think it's like an official title.
with the exception of the game writers, I think you are correct.
Valid, yes. For books at least.
Yeah, totally.
So, you know, Jedi Fallen Order, icon, just brilliant in its own right. A great game. How did Battle Scars come about? How did this project find you? And what was your reaction to knowing that you'd be, you know, bringing these characters and ushering them into a new era of their own journeys?
I had been a big fan of JFO. I loved the game when it came out and especially loved Marin. I think the second I finished playing the game, I tweeted, "Let me write the Marin book." And so I had been like really vocal in how much I enjoyed it and how much I enjoyed the characters. And Battle Scars, much like with the previous projects we were talking about, I was approached about Battle Scars by my editor, Tom Holler, who, you know, this isn't really my story to tell, but I later found out that Tom was like, "Sam is the only person to write this book. And then when Sam says no, we'll find someone else." But he was kind of like, this is the person. Like, Sam is the one who has to write this book. He felt really strongly and really passionately about that from the start, which I feel very touched and honored about, frankly. You'd have to ask him why, I guess. But maybe it was my unhinged tweeting about how big a fan I was of it. But I mean, I think in part it was because Respawn wanted to make canon the fact that Marin was pansexual, which they had always planned for her from the start. So I think I was a good choice for that. I think my experience in games, and then again, I think my being a fan of the first game and everything all kind of probably contributed to that a little bit. When I got the email from Tom, I melted down. Called my agent immediately, being like, "Make it happen.
Like, yes.
I don't care what you have to do. We're doing it. Whatever they want, I'll do it."
Easiest yes ever.
Easiest yes ever. So it was incredibly exciting because, like, I am such a big fan of these characters. Like, getting to do anything for them is wonderful. And frankly, getting to work with previously Del Rey, now Random House Worlds, was also very exciting for me because, like I said before, they put out such great quality sci-fi content that I was excited to work with the team there.
Absolutely. I am such a fan. Like these bookshelves behind me have lots of stuff in them, but there's a bookshelf in another room that's all Star Wars. All Star Wars.
Yeah. Time. Oh my gosh. Totally. So that was very exciting. Yeah,
and I feel like I remember your initial tweet as well. And I feel like I remember talking about it amongst my friends and being like, we need a Marin book. We love Marin. So now,
oh my gosh, yes.
Now that this has all happened, like with these characters, you know, and I think you mentioned in an interview with Amy Rickow as well that, you know, you were like, I'm going to write this character. I would love to write this character. You know, what were the most important elements for you to capture about Marin as you dove into her point of view in this story?
Yeah, I really did manifest that for myself.
And I support that. I love that.
Thank you so much. I think what is most interesting for Marin is that Star Wars in general, we deal with a lot of characters who have a lot of trauma, been through it, but we're often seeing the way that they deal with it. I mean, the books are a little bit different because we do get to, you know, we have books like Phasma and Delilah's upcoming book about the Inquisitor. And, you know, we get slightly different perspectives, but generally in Star Wars, we're talking about seeing things from the Jedi's perspective or a Jedi's perspective. And we rarely, not only in Star Wars, but in books or media in general, I would argue, get to have a POV character who is a woman who is like kind of bad. Like Marin is like kind of evil a little bit in some ways. Like Dathomir is not a great place. Like her powers come from the dark side. The way that she thinks about things, the way she was raised, the way she deals with issues is just like fundamentally different from the way that Cal or Seer or even Grease, who is like a normie, would deal with these things. That's what was most fascinating for me about Marin, was being able to take a character who is essentially an anti-hero, who is trying to do good, but also like doesn't really know what that means, or is like forming her own definition of what that means, or doesn't really care about what other people think that means necessarily, in trying to do what is right for her. And also someone who has been living in a place of, for such a long time, all she did was stagnate and ruminate on her rage and her sadness. And the only people she really had around to talk about that were Knight Brothers, not great, and like Malikos, who encouraged all of the worst tendencies in her when it came to that and was manipulating her. So not really talking to her in good faith about it. Since then, the only other people she's had to talk about it really are Jedi. So what is that? How is she dealing with that internally? What things does she feel she's not allowed to say? What feelings does she feel like she's not allowed to have when it comes to trying to work through the fact that she's lost everyone she's ever loved? She's lost her planet. She's been taken away from her home. How does that manifest in both herself mentally and then physically as well?
I have to say, Marin being such a huge focus of this book was a welcome surprise, because obviously when you play the video game, Cal is the central character that you're focused on, and there are the Mantis crew on the periphery, but we don't really get inside their minds. And something you just did so well with this book was I came out of it feeling like I had such a deeper understanding of each and every character in this book, like not just Marin, but Seer and even Grease, who's like, Grease is just sort of the hotshot player guy on the surface, but like deep down, he's also got some trauma there.
Yeah, that really means so much to me, because this was originally pitched to me as a Cal book, and something that I fought really hard for and that I thought was really important with this book was getting the POVs of all the other characters, because all the games, you know, the games are always going to be largely from Cal's point of view, because he's your player character. This, a book mm-hmm. like this is really the only opportunity we ever have to kind of, or like a comic, like with Sears comic or whatever. These are the only opportunities that we have to dig into the thoughts, mental state, insight of the rest of the crew. It really was a unique opportunity to be like, I can take whole pages to just say, like, what is Seer thinking? You can't ever do that in a video game. Even if it was a seer video game, you can't do that. So because necessarily the game is focused on action and having fun. That's not fun in a game. Like, nobody wants that. So I think like I'm really pleased to hear you say that because it was really important to me.
Yeah, there is one conversation too, specifically, we won't spoil it, but between Seer and Cal about, you know, like purpose and legacy. And I thought it was one of the most, I think it might be my favorite scene in the book.
Oh, thanks.
And just speaks to how much of Seer we do get. And I can't wait to go into Survivor and learn more about kind of where she is, you know, post battle scars. So very exciting. But with Marin, continuing on that, you know, she deals with a lot of the same emotions that Jedi do. But she doesn't necessarily have that sort of central pillar that keeps the Jedi in line and that they kind of quote unquote worship or live by. You know, she's again, she's on the darker side. She is fueled by hatred and rage. But somebody like Fret comes into her life and everything changes for Marin. Like, you know, can that flame that might have been extinguished with the genocide on Dathomir, can that be relit? How does this other person make her feel? And has this other person experienced some of the same sense of loss as she has? What did you want to convey about these characters through that relationship specifically and like how they find commonality with each other?
I appreciate this question so much. And I think you really hit it bang on the head in your question, really, which is that Marin has, as we said previously, Marin's only really been able to talk about this grief and loss and tragedy and trauma that she's been through with Cal and Seer, who both are very much like, well, you can't be angry about it. You have to just accept, you know, acceptance and anger is a path to the dark side and you don't want to go down that road. But like Fret shows up and is like, I have also been through something horrible. And you're allowed to be angry about that. The first step in getting through stuff is anger. You know, I mean, it's the first step is denial, but then you have to move into anger. And if you don't allow yourself to move through anger, you can never get to the rest of those healthier moments. And so all really Cal and Seer have kind of been telling her to do is like, just put it behind you, just move on. Like, you know, in whatever healthy way that you can, but Marin can't get there until she finds someone who essentially gives her permission to be angry, that this happened to her, that it was unfair, that like, this isn't the thing that anybody should have had to go through. And I think that that is what Fret really provides for Marin. I think the other purpose that Fret really serves in the book is to expose a lot of the fractures that had already been formed between the members of the Mantis crew over the couple of years that had passed between JFO and Battle Scars. They're, you know, they've been through a lot and they're sort of a lot of things that are bubbling under the surface, a lot of this turmoil, these arguments they haven't really wanted to have because those conversations are going to be hard and scary and maybe really sad and messed up and lead to other conversations that aren't so great. And so they've been kind of in a lot of ways just keeping that below the surface and denying it. Fret forces all of that to the surface much faster than I think may have happened otherwise.
I think that that's such a really interesting idea because, you know, we of course have this team that we know fairly well from the game, and then the opportunity of like getting to add a new person in there is getting to pick at them in a new way. And I just wanted to know, like, what was most exciting for you navigating the relationships between the Mantis crew that we already know and their varying motivations? And what was most important to you as you kind of crafted the tone of their interactions and the tone of the story so the readers felt like they were a part of this crew?
I think that the most interesting thing about introducing Fret to the crew was basically taking all of the ways that the characters on the Mantis didn't really know that they were feeling and forcing them to confront it. So like, if Cal is feeling a certain kind of way about seeing Fret and Marin together, like, why is that? If Seer finds it hard to trust her at first, what is that about? Like, all of, you know, if Maren is like, I want to hang out with you 24/7, like the second she shows up, like, why do we think that is? It was really interesting, to your point, to like pick at those threads in these characters in that kind of way, while also wanting to maintain that real family, found family feeling from the game. But while being true to the idea that family fights sometimes, you know, that was my doorbell. Sorry.
Yeah. Family does fight. And I think you did a great job not shying away from that. It's not always going to be sunshine and roses for the Mantis crew, especially when you have such different backgrounds for each and every one of those people. So I appreciated the authenticity of this book to be like, no, we're going to get into really big arguments and we're going to need to like step aside for a minute to get our heads on straight and figure out if this is something we want to continue with. And I believe too, from the survivor synopsis too, I'm not asking anything about that, but just the fact that it mentioned how the crew was a little bit split up. So going into this book, I was like, what could lead to that? You know? And I think you mentioning that there are fractures there, it just kind of speaks to how that might happen. And I think somebody too, who is such a staple of the group and could prevent it from falling apart, is Cal himself. I know we've gotten, you know, 20 minutes into this without diving into Cal, but
we love you, Cal.
Sorry, Cal. Cal, sorry. You get two games, buddy. It's all right.
I mean, totally, totally.
You know. But I think something that was great with Cal in this book was him kind of determining what his role the group is, and I think he sees himself as sort of the shield for everybody else.
Yeah.
And what was it like to dive into his story specifically with him taking on more of a leadership role and growing as a character and really looking out for his friends without also going too far as to, you know, go the Anakin route and be a little overprotective and fall to the dark side, you know, like battling those emotions?
I think the really cool thing about getting to explore Cal is that he's so earnest in JFO, even though he's been through so much. He's such a real earnest dude, in a way that I feel like we didn't get a lot of a chance to sort of delve into why that is in the game, again, necessarily, because the game is preoccupied with telling the game story and being fun to play, which is the purpose of books like this, you know? And so it was cool to kind of get to dive into Cal's head and say, like, okay, well, that earnestness comes from a place of always wanting things to be okay, always wanting to be okay for other people. And as you said, always wanting to be that shield, and not really taking the time to consider the ways in which that might make other people feel small, unnecessary, protected in a way they didn't necessarily ask for. And that's a hard thing to handle. I think like a real common theme among all the characters in this book, including the fifth brother, is that they're all trying to do the right thing. And they're all trying to do what they really firmly believe is the right thing for the future of the Jedi, basically, or you know, their own personal futures, or the future of the Mantis crew. But oftentimes their decision about what that looks like doesn't or hasn't been taking into consideration what other people may have decided about that. And like, in what ways are those things going to be incongruous, you know?
Totally. And oh my gosh, so much to think about these characters.
I know. Which is so great.
They're so interesting. I feel like I'm juggling a couple questions in my head, and I kind of want to jump to an idea that we've brought up a couple of times, which is, you know, the differences in opportunity between the video game format and the book format. Mm-hmm. And what both of these storytelling mediums can allow us to see of the characters, and also just show us as, you know, as medium. And, you know, I'm wondering what sort of connections, whether they be kind of large story beats and ideas or minute details, did you want to kind of intentionally draw on from the JFO player experience to make fans of the game feel, you know, like they were welcomed into the book and satisfied with the story, as well as making it accessible and enjoyable for people who may be brand new to these characters?
Yeah. I mean, I obviously put in a salt joke about Greece. That was big for me. Needed to get that in there. Really important. right off the bat.
Absolutely.
I think one of the most important things for me when writing this book was making sure that the action in the book felt like the action in the game as much as possible. I wanted, when Cal was in the middle of a fight with stormtroopers, for it to be like identifiable as the actions that you can and did take in the video game as Cal. So I spent, I've obviously played the game a bunch. I beat it way back in the day when it came out, and like, I'm familiar with all of it. But when I was actively writing the book, I had YouTube videos open constantly of Cal's movesets, so that, I mean, it doesn't map one-to-one exactly because this is a book and I did have fun opportunities to make Cal like ride on a bounty hunter who has a jetpack in the air or whatever, which you like definitely can't do in a video game. But for the most part, it was really, really important for me for those actions from the game to map almost directly onto the things that Cal does in the book in terms of his moveset. I think that my history as a game writer was really helpful there because I know how game writers write about the actions that characters take and the way that they describe them when playing. So that was really important to me. And it felt like the thing that was going to maybe connect it the most to the game and make people who played the game be like, hey, I did that. I know how to do that. I feel like I can see that in my head because I saw it in the game a bunch. The key to making sure that new people could come into this book without it feeling like impenetrable was making sure that it was a story that could stand on its own. Obviously, we're serving a lot of masters here. You know, this is a book that takes place between two video games. It has to build on what has already existed. It has to set up what is about to exist without stepping on the toes of the themes and the stories and the character development that is going to happen in the game. But it also has to do that in a way where it is a story that has a complete beginning, middle, and an end that can be enjoyed as a standalone, you know, that doesn't just feel like, oh, a bunch of stuff happens and now you have to go play the video game to like kind of find out. So that was a real challenge. I think we got there, but making sure that it really felt like its own cohesive story was important to making sure that as many people could enjoy the book as possible. And, you know, hopefully we'll get some folks who read the book who haven't played the game who are inspired to do so afterwards.
Yeah. And I think it's a really easy book to jump into as well, because immediately upon picking it up and starting it, the voice and the tone of the story are so strong and friendly and familial in a way, because of, you know, the kind of characters that Cal and Marin are, and you bring them to life so vibrantly. I immediately thought as well with the action, I was like, oh, this is so visual. It's so fast paced and it's moving. So I think you nailed it on both fronts, especially considering I haven't.
Oh, great.
It's just a compliment hour. I'm sorry. But since I haven't.
No, go okay, on.
I haven't played the game in a while. Like, you know, since it's been out,
yeah.
You know, I am a very casual gamer. So I played it, I completed it, I loved it, I cried, but I haven't had the opportunity to revisit it. So jumping in, I was like,
yeah,
oh,
totally.
I feel like I'm back in this world pretty quickly and really refreshed and was remembering things. So two thumbs up for me.
Oh, great. I'm so glad. Yeah, that's really lovely to hear. I think that's something that I try to bring to everything that I write, is that sense of sort of, humor and hope, which is common in the Star Wars universe in general anyways, which is great. But I appreciate hearing that. So thanks.
Something that the book wasn't shy on either was humor, specifically like with Grease and some of the things that he has to say throughout the book, because he just really speaks his mind sometimes. It's great.
all the time?
Yeah, all the time, pretty much. But he's also got he wears his heart on his sleeve when he needs to. But I knew this was going to be the case when I read Luke on the Bright Side, because I think that was the first time where I really read some of your Star Wars writing. And I was like, oh, we got to get Sam Meggs to write a book, because this is good. I want this as a full book. And we knew you'd bring that to Battle Scar. So like, how do you balance that comedic relief with this crew? Because again, they are such vastly different characters with different senses of humor, and we see that in the story, but also like balancing it with the bleak times that they're living in. They're on the run, you know, they're trying not to be killed. There's a lot of danger on the road, including an Inquisitor. Like, there's a lot going on with them.
Yeah, I mean, that means a lot to me. Luke, on the bright side, I remember getting the proof of that book for the first time and looking at the titles of all the rest of the stories, and they were all like really serious things, like normal titles. And I remember emailing my editor being like, oh my God, I will change the title of my story. Like, this is kind of a joke. Like, don't even worry about it. And she wrote me back being like, don't you. And I was like, all right, it lives, I guess.
We love a good pun here on the podcast. Like, we try. True. So we, you know, from one pun lover to another.
Thank you so much. I appreciate that. But I think this is something that I try to bring to all of my writing, which is like, I am not a grim, dark writer. I'm never going to be that person, whether it be in games or in comics or in novels. I think there's totally a place for that. And people who do that well, I think it's so impressive. It is not how I write or how I like to write. And I think in part it's because I think it's more challenging to try to write a story about serious stuff with humor in it. I also think that that is the way that humans actually deal with hard things. You know, we laugh at, you know, you're gonna laugh at a funeral or whatever, you know what I mean? Like, we deal with impossibly difficult situations through dark humor, through by laughing about it or finding the moments of lightness where we can in order to like continue surviving. I think it is a lot harder to do that. I like to challenge myself with that. And so it was really important to me to include that in this book. I also think like the game itself has a lot of really funny moments. And so it made sense to continue that through here. It's just the way that I think that things would be on the Mantis, which is that like things are hard and awful for the most part, but like to get through your day to day, dumb stuff. You know, you have right. to do dumb stuff. Yeah.
not dumb stuff, but humor in this sense. We know you love the Boglings, icons, heroes in their yes. own right. And one, of course, makes its yes. home on the Mantis. You know, did you want to include Boglings even more in this story? How often were you thinking about adding a Bogling to a scene? Just yes, you know.
All the time. So true. Wanted it to be a book entirely about Boglings. I really wanted them to let me name the Bogling on the ship. They did not let me do that, which I understand. I think the game folks probably want to do that, which is totally fair.
Valid.
But I remember being like, if Bogling's been on the ship for 2 years, it should have a name.
Everybody calls it something.
We should
different.
Be able to name it in the game.
I love that.
Legend of Zelda, you can name your horse. We should name the Bogling and Survivor. Come on.
This EA. I love. I don't know if you can do that or not, but I would love that.
So you know, I know the game is done. You know, it's they're putting the,
customize the
they're
Bogling,
putting the, you know,
paint it different colors.
The game, you know, in the packing right now as it's gonna get shipped out. But like if they want to make a last minute update in, you know,
a DLC Bogling patch.
Yeah, a DLC.
Whatever. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Name the Bogling. You can put little outfits on it, yes. just like you know, your lightsaber or the ponchos on Cal. I mean, they can take our ideas. It's fine.
I'd be spending all that microtransaction money on Bogling outfits. But like hypothetical question, non-canon, if you could name a Bogling in the video, if you could like as a player name your Bogling, what would you want to name your Bogling?
Oh, I tried to name it after my dog. My dog's name is Evie. I tried to call it BB. It didn't work out.
I love it. Yeah, that's great though.
I did try to make a poncho joke in the book and it also got cut, but you know, I made a joke about Cal wearing an armor poncho, which doesn't make any sense.
I think
and they were like, this doesn't make any sense. And I was like, I know.
I think there is
that's
a,
the joke.
Is a reference to fashion choices, though. Like while he's
okay,
yes,
yeah.
battling,
yeah,
something about the poncho. You got it. There's something there.
Okay, great.
When the pink poncho, that did make it in there. I remember reading that. That was one of the couple times, many times
the
I laughed.
The Octobocto fashion.
Yes, yeah, exactly. oh my gosh, so good. Speaking of Cal and him being a leader in this book, and I think Seer is another person in this book that really holds the crew together. And we've talked a little bit already about legacy and like the legacy of the Jedi and how much also like how much artifacts play a big role in this book. Why did it make sense for you to go to that point with the character and the sort of get into How did you get into her mindset of being like, you know, I just lost Trilla. Maybe this makes the most sense for me, is to start to like think of a true purpose, and maybe fighting isn't always what I want to be doing, because like, look how much loss has kind of happened along the way because of that. Like, what is my legacy going to be? That's more important.
Yeah, Seer's journey is fascinating for me in that in JFO, she's dealing with this trauma of losing Trilla, and the way that she handles it in JFO, she goes to the dark side. By the end of that game, we know that she's learned her lesson and she's never going to do that again. But that trauma still lives. And so the question was kind of, how does that manifest now when she is dealing A, with future Inquisitors, but also B, when she's looking at the bigger picture of like, what do I want to leave for the future of the Jedi? And I think she answers this in two different ways that both come back to the same place of pacifism, which is her being like, I can save everybody. I can save everybody, which you can't. And also like, yeah, I need to set things up so that this never happens again, or so that there is a start point from which people can build in a way that like, I think will prevent this from happening again, which again, you can't know. All you can do is set up the building blocks in the way that you think is best, and people will do with that what they will, which is kind of the same thing you can say about reaching out a hand to an Inquisitor and saying like, I can help you. People will either be ready to accept that or they won't. They will take what you build and do what they will with it. And so that was really interesting. I think Seer almost goes from swinging too far in one direction to swinging too far in the opposite direction. And she needs to find that happy medium. I did an interview earlier today where the interviewer was like, Star Wars, characters not great at finding the middle ground.
They're right. They're right.
That's true. And I think that's sort of Seer's story here a little bit, you know?
Yeah, it's tough to be a pacifist when literally everybody in the galaxy wants to murder you, including bounty hunters and Sith.
And if you're not willing to do what you have to do, how is that going to like, that's going to be bad too. And in what ways is that going to like be really bad?
And speaking of Inquisitors as well, I mean, we've had so many appearances, Obi-Wan Kenobi, Jedi Fallen Order, Rebels, upcoming in Delilah Dawson's book, which you mentioned.
Yes.
What was it like to explore the fifth brother a bit more and tell a bit more of his story?
It was really exciting. One of my favorite opportunities about writing Battle Scars was when Lucasfilm kind of came to me and was like, we want you to use the fifth brother, but we know that we don't know anything about him. So we want you to tell us more about him, like take him and run with him. You know, where does he come from? All we kind of know about him from Obi-Wan and from Rebels really is that he is a tough fighter, an aggressive fighter who doesn't really get along with people. That's kind of all we have. We don't even know his species. And so it was a really cool opportunity to be like, what would cause, you know, a Force user to end up like this? And listen, I gotta say, writing his POV chapters was really fun because the fifth brother makes some points. I personally think the Jedi Order sucked in a lot of ways. He was personally victimized by it in a way that impacted his feelings about them for life, which is not to say that I think he's right or that the Sith are right, you know, but I think that the fifth brother thinks that he's the hero as much as Cal does. And it was cool to get to kind of indulge my, you know, as we have this conversation, Brad is wearing a Directed by Rian Johnson sweatshirt from Super Yaki that I also own.
It's a great one. It
allowed
soft.
Me, yes, it's, oh my God, so soft. And it allowed me to indulge my The Last Jedi love in being like, you know what sucked? The Jedi. Getting to like write that out and be like, yeah, honestly, that did suck. Maybe something new should have been put in their place entirely. Like, you know, I got to kind of live that fantasy through the fifth brother's POV chapter.
The legacy of the Jedi is failure. Anyway,
yeah, man. Yeah, it's not great. It's not.
They don't make it easy.
I don't necessarily agree with Seer being like we should put all these like Jedi artifacts together and people need a history to build from. But I also see why she sees that. Like, that makes a lot of sense. And some people do feel that way. And, you know, we leave the statues up to remember, but we should put them maybe in places that don't venerate them. Like, it's that kind of, it's that kind of thought and that kind of conversation that goes into all of this. So it was really fun to get to invent. And it's also fun as a Star Wars writer to get to leave your mark on the canon in some sort of like indelible way. And so like I got to invent the planet that the fifth brother is from. So, you know, that's cool.
Forever on Wikipedia. Success, yeah, man. Story. I don't know. That's pretty cool if you ask me.
That's what I'm saying. Yeah.
You know, to wrap up, I kind of want to bring us all the way to the beginning, to the dedication of this book, which is to everyone who has gone out in the world and found their own family. Sorry to spoil the dedication for anybody, you know, but it's a good one and I want to talk about it. You know, found family is a really strong theme. And as we've talked about a bit throughout this conversation of the Mantis crew, you know, what does found family mean to you? Why was it important for you to weave this theme into the story, and what do you hope readers take away from this book?
As a queer person, I'm a lesbian. As a queer person, as a part of the queer community, found family is deeply important. A lot of people who go through the process of coming out in whatever way that may be for them find that they're, you know, the family that they were born into is not necessarily accepting of who they are. I think that is a really common story among queer kids, queer adults. And part of the important thing about the queer community in general is that it acts as a surrogate family for people who have lost theirs to bigotry or hatred or, you know, that sort of thing. This is a queer story. This is a queer love story in a lot of ways, which I still feel very fortunate that they let me make. And it was a queer love story that I wrote while I was in the process of coming out as a lesbian to myself and to my family. And it felt important. I think that queer people gravitate towards found family stories for this reason a lot of the time, because we see ourselves in it. And so in this book about, you know, two queer women finding each other and, you know, figuring out the ways that it makes them better, it felt important to kind of be like, you know, even if someone evil comes and murders your entire planet and or creche of fellow force user children, there are people out there who will love you for exactly who you are, including your evil green witch magic.
That's
it felt important.
Yes, yes, absolutely.
That's the very relatable message.
You know, we've all got a little bit of green evil witch magic, you know.
Amen.
Yeah, need to love, you're right, somebody to love all of our sides. No, I'm right there with you. I'm right there with you.
Yeah, you get it. But I appreciate I appreciate that. Thanks.
Yeah, it's I think when you put it that way, it's even more beautiful. And I really like, again, even though Cal is a central focus of this book, I think Marin really, really is a huge part of the story, and it's she really gets the shine. Really beautiful, like several parts in this book where I just was like kind of the welling up in your throat, where you're like kind of choked up a little bit,
a little verklempt. Yeah, totally. Gosh, thank you. I'm so glad. Love to make people cry. As a writer, the dream.
Yeah, we're so used to High Republic books, so we're typically crying for all the wrong reasons. So yes, it was nice to finally cry.
Sadness.
For good reasons.
The real
romance.
For once. Yeah.
Feelings.
So,
yeah.
Appreciate it.
So real.
So
this was such a blast. Thank you guys so much for having me on. It was so much fun.
Yes. Thank you for joining us.
Yeah, no, thank you. Absolutely. Well, for our listeners who want to follow more of what you're doing and your work, where can they find you online, and what else do you have that's in the pipeline that we should know about?
Online, I'm just my name, Sam Maggs, SammaGGS on Twitter and Instagram. I'm Sam Writes a Lot on TikTok when I manage to force myself to make new TikToks instead of just watching them for 7 to 12 hours at a time. I have a bunch of secret projects in the pipeline right now that I can't really talk about yet, but I have stuff coming up. So follow my channels and I'll post about them there.
Sounds good. Will do.
Perfect. Can't wait.
Thanks.
Yeah, we appreciate you taking the time out of your day to join us. We can't wait for whatever's next for you. Hopefully it's more Star Wars. But until then, Sam, may the Force be with you. Always.
And also with you.
Thank you, everyone, so much again for listening to our Sam Maggs interview episode. We hope that you have enjoyed it, and we hope that if you've read the book, you've got something out of this episode. And if you haven't read the book, you are running to your nearest bookstore to go pick it up.
Yes, you should be doing so. And you should do so now, because if you read the book, you can catch our full spoiler discussion on the pod in the coming weeks. So stay tuned. It's coming very soon. We love this book so much, and we have a lot to say about it. So thank you to Del Rey for sending us a review copy, and for Sam for coming on the podcast. If you want to hear more from us in the future, you can find us on Twitter, Instagram, and YouTube, where we have all of our latest updates on the pod. And if you'd be so kind, leave us a 5-star written review if you enjoyed the episode, and follow us on whatever feed that you are listening to so that our future episodes drop into your feed like right away.
Yeah, that's the magic of technology and the internet, that they just will appear there. It's like a brand new concept. We also have a Patreon where tiers start at just a dollar. And if you want not just the episodes in your feed, but more episodes in your feed, in even like a dedicated Patreon feed, you can get the Patreon. You don't, of course, don't have to, but we are eternally grateful to our patrons who help make the show happen every week. So thank you to Ben, Brian, Cheryl, Clay, Deborah, Dylan, D Sizzle, Emma, Huang, Jennifer, Knights of Ren, Leanne, Craig, Levi, Lucy, Lindsay, Rob, Saber Bouquet, Santa, Skytalker, Steven, Tom, Travis, and our newest patron, Matthew. Thank you all very much. The list has had a couple of additions since the last time I did the whole list. I don't know how smooth that was, but thanks, guys. Really appreciate you.
That's a good problem to have. So thank you all for your support. Let's keep that list growing if you could. Helps keep the lights on here. And until next time, may the Force be with you always.